everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, go to pnwa.org. Speaking of conferences, they got a great conference coming up in September. I'll be there. I will also be down in Portland for the Willamette Writers Conference. Yes, I will. I'll be doing fearless writing down there. I think I'm leading things off. So if you're going to be down in Willamette, hey, I would love to see you then. So I had a wonderful conversation with debut novelist Jill Fordyce, a lawyer turned writer. Yes, indeed. Very interesting journey. She brought a great perspective, someone who is a real learner, I think. And it was just a very cool conversation. She is, she got her law degree from Santa Clara University in 1989. And for the majority of her career, Jill practiced, was devoted to representing indigent criminal defendants on appeal. She has argued cases before the California Court of Appeal and the California Supreme Court, and Belonging is her debut novel. Yeah, Belonging. Great story. Great person. Great conversation. And I'm glad I get to share it with you now. Enjoy. Okay, we got ourselves a new novelist, Jill Fordyce. Jill, how are you doing?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Now, you're new technically because your novel, Belonging, is your first.
Yes.
But it's been out for a little while, 7 months now, almost eight. Okay. Was January 30th this year.
Yes. Came out.
Okay. So you've had a little time to experience the ebbs and flows of post-publication. How are you feeling at this moment about your decision to write and publish this book? Do you regret it? Are you still glad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I'm so happy. We sold out of our first printing, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And we have a paperback coming out in October. So that's great. It was so busy from January 30th through kind of end of May, but really good busy. I mean, what could be better than talking to people about a book you've dreamed of writing your whole life?
Yeah.
I just had a book event last night about an hour away from here, and with about 20 women just sitting and talking about the book. And I mean, it's just all I really ever wanted from this process was to be able to connect and engage that way.
Did you do an event at Book Passage?
I have not. No, in fact, I haven't been up in the city at all. And I've done mostly private events where people have just hosted parties and invited everyone they know to come and.
Hey, that's great. That's great. All right. So Belonging's novel number one. You are not, however, fresh out of an MFA program. You've had a life and career. Your protagonist, I could have gone to school with her if I lived in California instead of Providence. But you have, I don't know if you're still having a career in law. Yeah.
So yeah, I stopped practicing. I'm still licensed, but I stopped taking new work when I got my literary agent, because then I was working so much more on the book.
Okay. But you were a lawyer and what kind of law were you practicing without really putting our listeners to sleep?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well,
so I was an appellate specialist and I wrote appeals for indigent criminal defendants. So it was a very specific, narrow field that actually worked well with both what I care about and raising a family at the same time. Because I would be appointed by the court to represent people who were already convicted but couldn't afford counsel for appeal.
Wow. Oh, you were a do-gooder. You were a bit of a do-gooder. Oh, so that's interesting. Because the law is an interesting field in that you kind of are a gun for hire to some degree. And really our justice system requires that everybody has representation. And you really have to, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a mob boss or whatever, you've got to have representation for this system to work. But you were sounds like you were trying to help people that you wanted to help.
Yeah, I mean, we get the cases. We don't choose them. You
Right.
get the entire record, which sometimes was taller than me,
Wow.
of the trial, and just see did they get a fair trial or not, and go through it all. There, it's a lot of writing, and
Yeah.
I would always start by reading the probation report because that's where you'd get the life story of
Yeah.
the person, and that really mattered in writing my briefs: is who is this person, and how can I help?
Yeah, now see now this is you see the overlap. You see the overlap with what you've come to do because I always like I'm a broken record, but I could have an entire show dedicated just to lawyers who have written or are writing novels. There are so many, and it's I think there's a personality type being a type A, hardworking, academic, bookish, blah, blah, blah. But I do think there is storytelling in the law. I mean, the law is really just a story. There's your version, and whoever you're who's opposing you has their version. And so it seems to me you have to get good at storytelling in some form, albeit in the archaic and somewhat little twisted language that is, well, twisted is not the right word, but it's a little dense. It's a little dense, we'll say.
It is, yeah.
But you
But
got
I
to tell a
agree.
story, right?
Oh, I agree. I mean, as an appellate attorney, that is your sole job, is you have a big brief, you have one oral argument, and you need to tell the story of either what went wrong with this trial, why this person deserves either a new trial or a reversal. It is all a story. I mean, if you're not telling a story, you're not doing a good job.
So interesting. And I remember my friend, we were talking, my friend who's a lawyer, who's now a judge. I was talking to him once. I was sort of arguing. So this was years ago when he just started. And I was sort of debating something. He's like, "You could be a lawyer, Bill. That's just what a lawyer does." I was like, "Yeah, I probably a storyteller in me probably could. I don't know if I would pass the LSATs, but I know I could tell a good story." Well, and so let me ask you, just out of curiosity, we're somewhat off topic, but now I'm interested, which is that how much does the person's life story? So you're an appellate, which means they've been convicted of something, right? But they don't have the money to because they want to appeal. And so appellate means appeal. Is that what that okay, that is? I never realized that until this instant. And so when you're appealing, because life story, now we're talking about sympathy, context. People's actions not happening in a vacuum. How often does that help get their sentence reduced or even thrown? Well, not probably not thrown out. Like, how much does that come into play?
I probably wouldn't know. All I know is that when I'm writing a brief, if I'm going to submit something that legally has a chance, it has to be factually really good
Yeah.
so that, these justices, they're not going to look for a sympathy case or something like that.
Right.
If they can at least understand the context, and it is, like I say, story, but it has to be fully factual. I mean,
Right.
it's
Well, that's
all
fine.
taken. Yeah, all taken from the record. I think having that context affects all people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can't ground it. I can't say, because
Right.
I've never worn the robe, so.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask my friend, see what he thinks. Yeah, we were getting together. We were all having fun. He said, "Sorry, I was late. I was writing search warrants." And I'm like, "Well, okay." Okay. So you love the law, you're doing something you like, you're raising a family, so it's you're maybe not like 80 hours a week working kind of thing, so you can have some free time, it sounds like. But raising a family, time consuming, I know. Were you writing? What was the writer? What was the creative writer doing while you were lawing and raising children and all the rest?
So, well, I have 5 children. They're
Ah, you
currently,
mad woman. Okay.
yes,
All right,
they're currently 20 to 33.
there we go.
But the summer my youngest start was going into kindergarten and my oldest was going into college, I decided that was my opening.
Wait a minute.
And
I have to pause for a moment
okay.
just acknowledge kindergarten and college occurring in the same
Yeah.
moment in your life. Okay, that
It
is just
did.
beyond me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I raised a couple, but they were not nearly that far apart.
Oh, well, there were 3 in the middle.
Yeah,
So,
I understand, but still, there was that span happening.
yeah. So there was that span. And I thought, well, I'm finally going to have like a little opening of time. And I've wanted to do this my whole life. And
Okay.
I've always taken classes through Stanford Continuing Education. I don't
Okay.
have an MFA. I think I could if we added up all of my credits, because I always wanted to keep, my finger in it a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. So that summer, I signed up for like Writing the Great Debut, is what I think it was called. And this is,
Okay.
yeah. So, and I started writing this book.
But that was a
And
few years ago. You
oh, a
started,
lot.
right? You
Yeah.
started writing this book at that class.
Yes.
Get out.
And
Really?
my kindergarten daughter is in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a, it was a long process, not of writing per se, but the whole rest of it, getting an agent, rewriting, waiting, so much waiting. Then obviously, all the rejection as well. So there's a
Yeah,
lot
there
going
was a
on, but
lot.
I was always writing. And the way that I pursued it in my personal life was waking up before everyone else. And that is still part of my practice.
See, now, when I'm teaching fearless writing, which is a thing I teach,
Yeah.
the number one complaint is time. And what I always say to them is, you get up, what you do is you get up earlier.
Yeah.
But it's very hard for people to do sometimes because they often feel, and so I'll put it to you. So I'll just do a little mini version of what I tell people, which is I say, okay, the simple answer is get up earlier. And people go, oh, and they write that down. I say, but that's not the problem. I said, you can't get up an hour earlier. You can do it once, twice, maybe a week. But if in the back of your mind you are thinking this is a waste of time, or you're questioning whether it's a waste of time, you won't do it. In other words, where's this going? Will it go anywhere? So obviously,
Yeah.
something in you didn't question the value of that time spent. Is that fair to say?
Yes, you must have read. Did you read the Rick Rubin book, The
No, I
Creator?
did not because I
Oh.
have books on creativity out, and I thought I don't think I
Oh,
want to
okay.
read somebody
Sorry.
else's. But yeah, no, this is from my own teaching, what I'm quoting.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just, yes, you, I mean, like I used to say at the very beginning, I can't write a novel without writing a novel. Like you have
Right.
to fundamentally be able to put yourself in the chair every day and believe you're going to complete, if not, publish or sell or anything
Yeah.
else, that you're gonna do the act of writing the novel. So yes, I think I did always believe that I was going to do it.
Yeah.
And this is probably part of your teaching too. It bears out. You get in the chair every single day at 5 a.m. There's going to be something that
There's
happened.
it, I will say when I wrote my first novel, I was 25 and
Oh my
started it
God.
when I start well started it, and I was waiting tables. I wasn't going to doing law, but I was waiting tables. And I'd written a lot of other things, but I'd not done the novel. And I remember when I finished the first draft, I told this person, I say, it's amazing. You get up and spend 2 hours doing something 6 days a week, you will have
Yeah.
300 pages. It actually doesn't take that long, truth be,
Yeah.
not for the first draft anyway. But you had to learn, here's the thing. You had to, so all right, so you're a literate person, you're verbal, you're communicative, you have good diction. I mean, it sounds obvious, but like there's a lot of kind of tools you just kind of bring to the table already. But that's different than writing a novel. It's different than telling a story. It's different than painting a scene. So you had to learn how to write a novel. Like what, how to do that. You've read a lot of them, I'm sure, but it's a
Yeah.
whole nother thing when it's coming out of you. Yeah.
Yes. And I don't know if it's strange or not, but I write in scene.
Good for you.
And so I don't write with any sort of structure in mind or even necessarily. I always knew what my story was,
Right.
but how it was going to be told, I did not know.
So you said, I'm going to write about X. You kind of have a sense of, I want this thing. It felt like, I don't normally ask this question, but this felt personal to me. It's fiction, but it felt personal. It felt like there was some part of your own life. I don't know what part exactly, but some part of your own life mixed in there. Is that fair?
Oh yeah, definitely fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, well, I will summarize, but it's a kind of a coming of age, but it's set in California and it's back a few years, most of it, a lot of it. And it's a very tender story. It's a love story. It's got a, there's a lot, there's a lot going on. I don't know. Do you want to try to do what, maybe you do a better job than I do.
Okay.
What's your elevator pitch?
Oh, my elevator pitch. It's
Well,
so
no,
funny.
just do whatever, say whatever the hell you want.
Okay, well, the kinds of stories that I love to read is what I wanted to write. And I had been inspired. I lost a childhood friend to AIDS in the early 90s, and I never got to see him again.
Right.
He left to another country and just kind of disappeared.
Right.
So after learning of his death, and this was when in my 20s, it just always I couldn't stop thinking how heavy-hearted it made me feel that we weren't in touch. She was a very close friend. We went from fourth grade all through college together. And when I decided I was going to write, I thought, what would it be like if these two characters did share everything with each other, got to be together again, and transformed each other's lives in some way? So I do have a lot of Jenny in me. She is not me, and it's not me anymore. But there is a lot of her experience growing up that I can relate to.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my idea for telling the story. And then I'm really interested in family and the effects of both hometown and family that linger long into life.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting when the family is both, you can see destructive tendencies and nurturing tendencies. And I love looking at the coming of age part because I want to understand, like, how is this a deep friendship? Why do these people love each other? How did these people choose to be a family? Why did this person decide to leave? And I think a lot of it can be found in those years.
Yeah. What surprised you most when you were writing it? What did you not expect?
I guess what I didn't expect was, it, this sounds so funny, but the unexpected was.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
There are some parts of my book that, I mean, a couple of parts that I would say, oh, this is my favorite part. And I know I didn't think of it. Yeah. It was a result of sitting there and continuing on with these characters and then it unfolding. And that was very surprising to me. That's the magic of writing. And
that's exactly the word that, and you know, if you write, now that you're writing, I assume you're working on book two, I assume, I hope, this is what you come in actually to depend on, is what you depend on something you can't control that will nonetheless make the book what it is. That's the weird, that's the necessary discipline and magic and faith, I think, that is writing creativity.
Yes, I completely agree. And I also think if you're in the practice every day, it opens up all sorts of synchronicity.
Yeah.
Which was really fun and exciting when I was writing this book. And
yeah, it's really the good part, I got to say. If I'm feeling frustrated with my work or bored by it, kind of, because I write about some of the similar things again and again. I think about that moment of when something new comes, because until something new comes, I don't know what my piece is about. Until the surprising thing happens, I don't really know what I'm writing about. And so and that's always great when it happens, you know, and it always does. And so that to me, doing this isn't worth it without it, I've come to believe.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm taking an essay class this summer.
Oh, that's my wheelhouse there.
Is it?
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's not mine. So I learned a lot, and I just read an essay by Pollock, I think, that's about it's about aboutness and writing something and then understanding what it's about later or what the reader brings to it.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the surprising part was the surprise.
Yeah.
Welcome to our world. What was the hard part for you? What was the hard part for you?
The hard part is continuing to believe in the face of lots and lots of rejection.
Ah, yes. Okay. So let me ask you this. So how did you keep your spirits up and your desire? How'd you stay with it? What did you tell yourself? Did you have a partner? Do you have a husband, partner?
Oh, yeah.
You go, I don't know. You might be flying solo at this point. I don't know.
No.
All right.
I have a husband for almost 36 years.
Hey. Oh, you beat me. See, we just had my 32nd anniversary yesterday. So you got me beat of you. Okay. So, all right. So you guys have been, you're a couple of veterans. You've been through this. Was he helpful? Was he supportive?
Oh, of course. I mean,
well, not all of them are.
Oh,
Jill,
yeah.
I hate to tell you, it's not always the case with the partners, but okay, he was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've known each other since I was 18.
Nice.
And he has known this has always been my dream. And he kind of provided the framework for me to pursue it.
Okay.
And
So he wasn't a problem. He wasn't a problem. So how did you get through it? What did you do? What did you say to yourself? How'd you deal with that?
I think the primary thing that happened for me, well, I stayed committed to the process, I think mainly because I couldn't not do that. Like if this was just something I felt I was going to do one way or the other. In fact, when I wasn't sure if I was going to get a deal for this book, I started writing something else because I thought I'm going to keep writing.
Yeah, that's
but
smart.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, I want to pause. It's really smart. It's the best thing you can do is keep working because it just keeps you in the flow of it. If you just sit there and wait, you can get depressing and it dries up your creativity. So yeah, you were wise to do that.
Yeah. And then I felt like I had a community of readers and writers around me that just kept saying, it's worth it. Keep going.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And people that I trusted, you know, published authors that I trusted, lots of people through the Stanford community that I had met, and that really helped. And even agents that declined the book, a couple of them really weighed in how maybe it wasn't a good fit for them, but all the things I liked about the book and to stay with it and provided
Right.
even,
Yeah, that can really help. And it's often true because remember, they have only so many books they can sell and they know that no. You know, I have a theory I'm going to share with you. This is one that I've been teaching lately and I've been interested in, which is that the key, I think, is that, so we love to write. So writing is a creative process. It's a blank page. You sit there. You want to follow the story. And we enjoy the creative process. And I think a lot of the challenge for writers publishing books is we stop seeing it as a creative process. It's just this thing that we got to do, kind of. But I think that if you can see it as a creative process, in other words, what do I do next? What, not just because you don't have an answer, just like you don't have an answer to what should come next in a story, but you're interested in learning what, if we can apply that same thinking to the process of finding a publisher, it becomes more interesting and dynamic than just kind of oppressive and scary and where we feel powerless and we have no volition in it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Somebody just went through it or went through it recently enough?
Yes, I wish I had thought about it that way.
Well, I wish I had too. This is something I've been recently coming to. I'm like, of course, I hate it because I didn't see it as creative. But it's all creative, really, if you can see it that way.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Right? Yeah, it makes sense. It's a way better way of looking at the roller coaster or the
curve. That's right. All right. You have my permission to spread that. When people ask you about writing their book, no, it's a new thing I'm on. And it's like, I want to see my whole life as an artistic experience. So I'm always happiest when I'm being creative. And so always see every moment, you know, as creative in that way. Like what, you know what the key, okay, and I'll stop. But this is like, but you know, I always think that at some point when you were writing, right, you reached the end of a sentence and you didn't know what came next.
Oh yeah.
Right. That's the critical moment. What do you do with that moment? How patient are you? How kind are you? How compassionate are you? But if you're writing, you reach those moments all the time. Like we have to learn how to deal with that. And I think in our lives, I know for myself, when I have reached the end of a metaphorical sentence, like what should I do with this book? Or how do I find more clients? Whatever. And if I don't get an answer right away, I kind of freak out sometimes instead of saying, being like I am at the end of a sentence in my writing. Does that make sense? And like having that same passion and curiosity and patience that I do with the writing that I do with all the decisions I have to make.
Yes, it's actually a really interesting metaphor for me because I just think I had something due last week in this essay class and I spent 3 of the days of the week flailing. Like I don't know what this is. I don't know what I'm doing. I tried 3 different, we were supposed to follow one of the master's forms. And then in the end, after all of that turmoil, I got up early in the morning and I sat one day and I wrote my essay.
Wow.
But that was necessary. That
flailing. Yeah.
Was necessary. And it happens a lot. It used to happen when I was even writing legal briefs. And to look back at it and recognize that, oh, that is part of my process. I am working through things.
Right.
It doesn't feel great, but it is part of the process to get to. It wasn't, you know, magic that morning. It was all week long to get to that. And it's interesting to look at it on the whole process, like you just said.
And maybe you'll stop thinking of it as flailing. But, you know what I
Flailing.
mean? Because you can call it flailing or you can call it your process. Because did you
Yeah.
watch, speaking of Rick Rubin, I think of him and Paul McCartney because he did this great thing with Paul McCartney where he interviewed him and they talked about music. And I don't know, did you see the Let It Be documentary that Peter Jackson made, that long Let It Be documentary of the
I don't think
that came
so.
out? It was the Apple TV put it out. Oh, it's great. I mean, if you like the Beatles, which I do, and it was really like well done and just them writing all that music. There's a lot of just screwing around. There's a lot of experimentation. There's a lot of just, you see Paul McCartney trying to come up with the lyrics to The Long and Winding Road, and he just done, you know, just what do you think? What should I do? And so, and he could call that flailing, but that
Yeah.
was their process. It was a very organic thing. So, you know, I think it's so important when we don't name our process as somehow wrong or bad or difficult. It's just the way you come to the answer.
Yeah, I fully agree. I'll have to think of a new word for
Yeah, what's a good word for, what's a good word, people?
the.
Exploring. You're exploring, maybe.
Yes, I'm in the explorative phase or exploratory phase. Yeah.
Don't you think one thing I've learned about craft is that, because I write a lot of personal narrative, memoir kind of stuff too, as opposed just not essays. But the more I've done it, and you will, I hope, learn this with fiction too, is I start learning what not to do. I more and more learn what. So it was when I was younger, I would do certain things and go, oh. Now I think about it and go, no, not going to do that. Does that make sense? Like, there's a whole bunch of things I don't, of roads I don't even go down anymore because I know they won't lead me anywhere.
Oh,
You know, in terms
yeah.
of how, some of the simple stuff, like how certain things are described or certain approaches to narrative. There's just a lot of little things you probably have already learned. Like, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. That doesn't.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yes, for sure. I always think of this. I think this interview was with Danny Shapiro. I heard
Oh,
years
okay.
ago that she was talking about being in a class where she had written something that was somewhat flowery. And the professor was like, "Well, what are you trying to say?" And then there was this reworking. Now I'm not even sure if it was her, but there was this reworking of this one sentence. And it was so much more powerful to just say what you wanted to say than to contrive something. And there's a lot of music in my book, and
Yeah, like you have the soundtrack to it too, if you
I
want
do,
to go
yes.
listen to it. Yeah.
And because I grew up in Bakersfield and the book is set there, I have studied a lot about the Bakersfield sound. And you know, that's kind of the way they were. They were telling it like it is. And a lot of it is lyrically very beautiful, but also really
Correct.
simple.
Yeah.
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 And
Yeah.
I love that. And I know that that is kind of the only way I can write. I could
Yeah.
never try to do something. I don't even know what the word
Well,
is.
poet more. I don't want to say it's, we say poetic, but simple can be very poetic. It's not really,
Yes.
but I know what you mean, and I'm so glad you said that because I've taught classes where, again, I teach fearless writing, so it's really like a more of a self-help class, really, more than anything else. But that's what I love. And this one student, I've had this a couple times where students have been down on themselves, usually because they write simply. And
Oh.
they're not sure if it means they're not smart, not interesting, not skilled. I write pretty simply too. My voice has really pared way down, especially in memoir. But that's just what works for me. And so it's great to hear you say that because I've, you know, tried to help them through, but there is a belief among some writers that they got to have some razzle dazzle or
Yeah.
else they're not real writers, you know.
Oh yeah. Yes, I mean that would not be possible for me, and I do know that about
Yeah.
myself. And I have started this next book, and it's interesting because it is the voice is there, and it's
Right
just,
away.
yeah.
That's nice. Are you enjoying it as much as you enjoyed the first one?
Yes, I mean I think in a way I'm enjoying it more,
Oh, well, you're
because
coming at it from a whole different place,
yes.
right? You
Yeah.
know more. Well, I'll tell you, Alice Hoffman said to me, do you know who Alice Hoffman is? She's a novelist. And she was like, yeah, every time I start a book, and she's written a lot of them, she thinks, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to write a book because it's not the same book she just wrote. Like, you have to learn how to write each book. That is true, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. I'm not deep enough in it yet to know. I haven't started my what word were we going to use? My exploratory phase.
There you go. Well, all right. So you just keep roaming around. Well, all right, people, if you like a good story, if you like a heartfelt story, I think you're going to like Belonging by Jill Fordyce. Check it out. Where all fine books are sold. I don't have a hand copy of it. I had to read it online, but
Oh,
Beautiful cover. Beautiful cover. Congratulations. I hope you're
thank you.
proud, but I'm not
Thank
done
you.
with you. I am not done with you. I have
Okay.
one more question. So I want you to do is so think about all the writing you've done, not the legal writing. I don't think about the creative writing you've done, even these essays that you can't stand that you've been writing. And if they've taught you anything about being a person, about life, they've taught you what?
Oh, gosh, so much. To be a better listener, a better observer. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of empathy in writing. And I think one thing I've learned in both writing and now publishing a book is how much none of it is about me. It's about the work. When I was feeling really vulnerable about coming out with a book that, as you said, feels sort of personal. A friend asked me to read Madeline L'Engle, and she has a beautiful passage that says something about, it's our job to serve the work, and it really is.
That's right. You know what's interesting? So, and then I can't help because you touched on something that means so much to me, which is that I always think if you write a story, the story arrives in service to you. In other words, it came because you asked for it, right? You said, I want this. So it shows up in answer to your question. But then once it shows up, you serve it. And it's like the story says, okay, now just trust me, you wanted this. If you serve me, you'll go somewhere you want to go. But you really have to then switch roles in a way, and you're not behind the wheel in the way sometimes people think authors are, right?
Oh, yeah, I fully agree. And I really have had to just. That is the only way I think I've been able to go out and really promote the book the way that I have, is because I really do want to serve the work. And
Oh, good attitude. Good
thank
attitude, Jill. Listen, you're going to do all right. You're going to do all right. This will be an interesting second chapter in your life or third chapter, whatever it is. I hope there are many more books coming from you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed meeting you and talking with you.
That's right, everybody. Serve that story. Serve it. Gotta serve it. Yes, you do. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend. I want to thank all of you out there. Listen, your imagination is there to serve you. Yes, it is. It'll help you along. It won't abandon you. And it's never more active, never happier than when you're doing something you love. So go out there, find something you love to do, and do it.